Today we're going to chant 6 again. Bhajan number 6 again.
Ise sabayori kama krodayodi kori bahire se sabayori acheye kaguda shatrutava Acheye ka guda shatrutama Kapatata namatara Arakuti nati bhara Kapatata namatara Arakuti nati bhara Kara murti para makaitava Kara murti para makaitava Ore mana guda katha doro Ore mana guda katha doro Se kara murtra bhule snana kore kutu hole Se kara murtre bhule snana kore kutu hole Pavetra bole amane koro Boliya mane koro Vane vagrihe vathako Se kare dure rakho Vane vagrihe vathako Se kare dure rakho Jara murtre tumi ami jvale Ta murtre tumi ami jvale Chariya kapatya vasa Jugala vilasa rasa Chariya kapatya vasa Chugala Vilasa Sagare Koro Snana Kele Sagare Koro Snana Kele Rupa Raguna Tapaya E bhakti vinoda chaya Rupa raguna tapaya E bhakti vinoda chaya Dekhite jugala rasa sindhu Dekhite jugala rasa sindhu Jivana sarathaka kore Sarva jiva chitta hore Jivana sarathaka kore Sarva jiva chitta hore Se sagare rekha bindu Se sagare rekha Kama krodha yodi kori Abahire se sabayodi Kama krodha yodi kori Bahire se sabayodi Acheye ka gudha shatru thava Acheye ka guda shatruta Acheye ka guda shatruta Acheye ka guda shatruta
Thank you. So starting with lust, anger, all these taken together, keep out all these foes, terror. And another great enemy you have, his name is deceitfulness. And he's a great hypocrite. This donkey-like form, the topmost swindler. Oh, my mind, these heavy words, please carry. Forgetting that this is donkey urine, do you bathe in so-called ecstasy, mentally thinking that it's purifying? If in the forest or in the home you stay, keep this donkey cheater far, far away. Its urine burns both you and me. Rejecting the cheating dress, in Radha Krishna's pastime zest, bathe yourself in pastime's ocean's jest. What Rupa Raghunath found, Sri Bhaktivinod looks, seeing Radha Krishna's nectarian ocean defined. Life becomes complete. Everyone's heart becomes stolen away just by a drop of that ocean. Mindavane Ramanareti Prasiddhabhumo Tatrapi Krishna Balarama Supadamule Genam Param Paramai Krishna Sudharma Chuktam Dandastu Deva Prabhupada Namo Namaste Namo Bhaktivinodaya Satchidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanu Gavaraya Te Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindubhya Vichapadidhanam Pavanibhya Vaishnavibhya Namo Namah Vande Rupa Sanatana Raguigo Shijiva Gopalako. So, I'd like to Are Cheta Prodhyata Kapato Kutinati Abarakara Kshiranamutre Snata Bada Hasikatamatamanam Apimam Sada Twangandarava Giridari Pada Prima Vilasa Shudam Bodo Snatva Swamapinatara Mamcha Sukaya. My dear mind, you've embraced the path of self-realization, yet you foolishly think you're cleansing yourself by bathing in the pretentiously fierce qualities of deceit and fault-finding, which are compared to impure donkey urine. Factually, you're incinerating yourself, dragging an infinitesimal spirit soul like me into the conflagration. Stop this suicidal course. Dive in the immortal ocean of sublime ambrosia that awaits you in loving devotional service at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. Resuscitate my very being, and thus give both of us endless happiness. So, in the commentary, in the Bhajan Darpan commentary, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes how different of these three groups of sadhakas. Svanistha sadhaka, one who is absorbed for his own self-realization. Parinistha sadhaka, a devotee who's attached to rules and regulations and wants to propagate that among human society. Both of them are generally householders. And the Nirapeksha sadhaka, one who is detached, takes pride in himself being detached, a renunciate. Now he describes how each of these three classes of devotees, practitioners, become pretentious or become deviants by deceitful, cheating the public by not behaving honestly. And these are noteworthy things because they're all over the world. And they've definitely, judging from my experience, and I'm sure yours also, they definitely invade spiritual organizations. So, writing them down or making a note of them one after another is pretty good. So, the deceit of the Svanistha sadhakas. So why don't you write these down? It would be really nice. This is a nice list. So write them down from the book, or you can mark them A, B, C, D like that in the book, and underline them, whichever way you like, because they're really good. A is the deceit of the one who is attached, Svanistha sadhaka, completely disregards rules and prohibitions of varnashram and makes endeavors to please Krishna for his own self-realization. Right? So now his deceit in that situation is A, indulging in sense enjoyment on the pretext of sadhana bhakti. This has been also described See, he says, he indulges in sense gratification in the name of satisfying the Supreme Lord. You see that? It's on the top of page 26. Okay? You can mark that. That's A. Take a pen. Mark that. That's number A. Now, that's interesting because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya Lila, chapter 6, verse number 225, 226, where Raghunath Das Goswami has received some instructions from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu through his guru. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antya 6, verses 225 and 226. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is giving instructions to Raghunath Das. One, it says there that if a renunciate tries to satisfy his belly too much, he should be happy with whatever vegetables and things that he can get easily. Otherwise, if he tries too hard to satisfy it, then he'll become too much addicted to enjoying the senses and he will be neglected by Krishna. This is in verse number 225. Then, in verse number 227 is the very famous verse, Jivara Lala say, E iti uti daya, Shishnu dara parayana Krishna nahi pai. If one who goes here and there trying to satisfy the senses of the belly and the genitals, he cannot get Krishna. So it's very interesting. This is also mentioned in the first shloka of Upadeshamrita by our Guru Maharaj in the purport. It's either that or in verse number 4 where it mentions about the dadi pradigranati, to give prasadam and accept prasadam. It's in number 1, you think, huh? Mentions there about if we offer Krishna prasadam specifically for the good taste, you cook some nice preparation and offer it to Krishna, it's nice for Janmashtami, this, that, but if, or some other day, but if you think that we will offer this and afterwards, we will enjoy our belly very nicely, our taste of our tongue and our belly very nicely by filling it up with this nice food stuff. Then, cooking it and preparing it in that way and offering it, and Krishna does not become interested in that thing. Then he has no need for that offering at that. It's mentioned about that. Duryodhana ko bhoga nakayo, ruga shaka vidura gharakayo. That in the song it says that Duryodhana had a very opulent feast for Krishna as Yudhisthira's messengers, because kings had very nice food anyway. But Krishna did not want to eat it because he did not care for Maharaj Yudhisthira or his mediation or himself as the personality of Godhead. Because Duryodhana had no bhakti, therefore Krishna was not interested in the opulent food. But when he went to Vidura's house, impelled by the hunger due to the devotion of Vidura's wife and Vidura, he was ready to eat a banana peel. There. Even though Vidura desired to adjust that. But it shows that the Lord is eager for the love of the devotee. His hunger increases correspondingly. So, if we should not, we should eat to live and not live to eat. Mritabhuk is one of the 26 qualities of a Vaishnava. And one should practice that, specifically on days like Ekadasi. One should try to increase one's hearing and chanting about Govinda and decrease one's intake of food, stuff, drink, etc., etc., to practice giving up the bodily conception of life. Now, so if you eager, now Prabhupada did mention, like for Westerners that were very much attached to certain kinds of food stuff, he said, well, if you're attached to that food stuff, one devotee's asked about ice cream and things like that. Prabhupada said, don't buy outside ice cream made by the Karmis. He said, if you like ice cream, because see, and that was in Seattle in 1968, and right near the temple there was an ice cream parlor. And sometimes when Prabhupada would walk by, the devotees were sitting in the booths, and they would slither down, so they'd avoid being seen. So Prabhupada later on, he mentioned it on the tape there, on the lecture, don't eat outside ice cream. He said like that. But then when some devotees said they were very attached to the taste, Prabhupada, and Prabhupada said, so if you like the taste, then why don't you cook it and offer it to Krishna? You may prepare it yourself and offer it to Krishna. Then take the prasadam. That is, for one who is addicted to the substance anyway, at least if it's cooked by your own hand and offered, that is better. But don't cook it and offer it with a lusty attitude. Offer with love and devotion and not lust and commotion. That's the idea. So one should not lust after it as you're preparing it or with like this. One should do so with a devotional mood. Otherwise, Krishna does not need it. So that devotional mood was underlined there in that Chaitanya Charitamrita Antya Lila, chapter 6, verses, to show about how a renunciate should behave, not to try to cheat the public. So, and Raghunath Das Goswami religiously followed these principles, probably to an extreme. It was described that Gauranga Mahaprabhu was very pleased afterwards when he found out that Raghunath Das was, he was begging Madhukari from outside the gate of the Singhadwara gate of Jagannath Puri. And that was pleasing to Mahaprabhu, but then Raghunath thought, well, this is like a prostitute, you know. Though this person may give me, oh, they're going inside, they're not giving me. Oh, there's another person coming, perhaps they may give. It's like Pingala in the 11th canto, chapter 8. She was a prostitute, so she would sometimes stand outside the door and in the evening hours. So, oh, here's a nice man, he looks handsome, maybe he will want to come and purchase my body and enjoy me. No, but he's one away. Oh, here comes another fellow, like that. So it's the same thing. Raghunath Das Goswami considered such mentality, oh, here comes somebody, he may give me something to eat. No, he went away. Oh, here comes another person, perhaps they may give me some donation. Well, he considered that to be like a prostitute mentality. So some devotees, they adopt what is called unchavriti, which means renunciates, they will eat grains which they collect from the fields. Loose grains scattered after harvesting or something like that. They collect something. And that's one vritti. Collect some grains that are fallen down in the marketplace. Nobody cares for them. You don't have to beg from any shop then, or anybody. Don't bother anybody. Just pick things up yourself and collect. Then cook it later on and offer it to Krishna. Be simple. That's called unchavriti. The sadhus used to do that. Another one was called, aside from Madhukari begging 7 or 8 houses, another one was called ajagar vritti. Ajagar vritti means lying down the activity of a python, meaning if something crosses your way, you will eat it. It means such a person will chant the holy name and just fast for days, you know, and somebody will bring him something. Previously in India, people like to give sadhus, like to invite sadhus, like that. So if sadhus were not going to your house to take their meal, then sometimes people would see sadhus and they would bring him things, bring them milk, bring them vegetables, something like that. Even up to 50 years ago, villagers would do that. Oh, here's a sadhu, he's come to our village, he's new, so let us give him some donation, let us bring him some vegetables. That was the etiquette. So because that was the etiquette in those days, they could do that. That is called ajagar vritti. Madhavendra Puri did that. He was sitting by Govardhan, fasting. Krishna came and brought him some milk. Hari Baba, what are you fasting for? In my village, nobody fasts. Here, why don't you drink this milk I brought you? See? If nobody brings him something, then I bring him whatever he supplies his necessities. Krishna mentions there very nicely. So, this was called a jagar vritti. Now, this may not be possible, some of these types of vrittis. Times have changed in India. It is all due to kaladeshan pratpara, time, place, and circumstance. But one should not indulge in sense gratification in the pretext of sadhana bhakti. One should take prasadam regularly. And neither Prabhupada was pleased when devotees avoided temple prasadam, thinking it to be over too rich or too opulent or not austere enough. Prabhupada was not pleased with that either. One sannyasi godbrother of mine, I remember in 1976, was kind of like living on a macrobiotic diet, eating only raw foods and this and that. And he was finding fault with temple prasadam and not taking Mahaprasadam and like that. So he ended up falling down. It was artificial. But even if one is doing a vrata like Kartik vrata, Chaturmasya vrata or something, and somebody who does not know that you're doing a vrata comes to you with Mahaprasadam, then you at least touch the Mahaprasadam to your forehead, you know, like that, out of respect. Or honor the Tulsi leaf from the top of the Mahaprasadam. Like that. So you're not disrespecting the Mahaprasadam. This sannyasi was actually not choosing to find fault that, oh, this too opulent Mahaprasadam or not properly will cause devotees to fall down or cause problems. So he was, inadvertently, he was offending the Mahaprasadam. He did not last long at that. He ended up also leaving his vritta. So we cannot go to extremes. The point is that with types of vratas, one should take Krishna prasadam offered to the devotees by the devotees in the temple at regular times, and then gradually, according to your necessity, you may reduce your intake according to your requirements individually, not rashly or artificially doing things. So, first thing, is indulging in sense enjoyment on the pretext of sadhana bhakti. Human life is meant for high living, simple living and high thinking, not high living and with no time to think. Once Hridayananda Maharaj told a nice story also. When he first took sannyas, he thought that sannyasis had to be very, very extremely austere and like that. So he was reducing his eating and like that, and probably didn't like that, or evidently he thought he wasn't going to make it. I was on a walk from Los Angeles, and after the walk, they came in and they saw a big platter of Mahaprasadam from Rukmini Dwargadish. So Prabhupada stopped and looked at the prasadam, and all the sannyasis and everybody that was with Prabhupada, they all, whatever Prabhupada did, they did, you know. So Prabhupada's looking at the Mahaprasadam, so everybody's just staring at it. And then Prabhupada glanced at Hridayananda Maharaj and said, very gravely said, take all this and go eat it. So he grabbed that Mahaprasadam and he went up and he ate it. And I said, I understood that for so many days I was like restricting myself. Nah, sannyasi shouldn't eat any, you know, fancy food. So he was artificially restraining himself. But Prabhupada didn't like that attitude in him. So without, even though he didn't tell Prabhupada he was doing that, Prabhupada could evidently notice it on his face or notice it on his mood or whatever. Too much austerity can make the heart hard. But however, there's no harm in devotionally. There's Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhajana Rahasya says, Mitta Bhuk Prasanna. One should, if one restricts his eating, he should do it with a happy heart, not artificially or cold-heartedly. Or another pretense is when a nirapeksha sadhana maintains pride, thinking himself to be an elevated Vaishnava, adopting a dress of a renunciate and regarding other sadhakas as an inferior due to false ego. So if you're restricting your eating and you're thinking, I'm better than everybody else because I do nirjala kadashi, or I'm better than everybody else because I don't eat their fancy food, you know, I'm more detached, then your head becomes proud, you know, swelled up, and that's pretentious. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Bhajana Rahasya says, Mitta Bhuk Prasanna. You may choose to eat less for the purpose of saving your time for serving Krishna, but you should not advertise it, and your mind should be in a happy heart. It's not for public consumption. Public seeing, oh, he's so austere. It's not the mood. With a happy heart. The Goswamis, they gave up eating and sleeping because they simply didn't have any time for it. They were absorbed in their bhajan so happily. They forgot about it. That's the platform gradually one works toward. That's only possible when you have a higher taste. So, indulging in sense enjoyment in the pretext of sadhana bhakti could also mean accepting too much opulent facility. The disciples may want to offer their Guru Maharaj a fancy car. He may not like it. So he can let them know, this is too fancy, I think it doesn't cut a very good profile for a renunciate. I want to be collected in a simple conveyance. Or, if he's, like Prabhupada mentioned in one tape, when a news person was disturbed, oh, your disciples picked you up in a Rolls Royce. Don't you think that's pretentious? And Prabhupada said, no, as a representative of God, it's their duty to offer such service. I don't need to accept it for my sense gratification, but it's not bad that they offer such a thing out of respect. Would you speak of an ambassador of the country? Would you pick him up in an ordinary car? Prabhupada, and the journalist was silent. Then Prabhupada said, even if they brought a gold car for God's representative, that would not have been bad. But still, Prabhupada, in the early days of 1967, when the devotees did not have a fancy car, Prabhupada was happy to accept whatever they could give. Some old jalopy or something, he probably wrote in it without any problem. Or in Haridaspur in Bengal, there was no roof. The building didn't even have a roof over it. And there's certainly no furniture and no sitting facilities. Prabhupada just threw his chadar on the ground, sat. You know, there was no fancy vyasasana. Prabhupada didn't care. Folded his chadar up, sat down. This is simple sadhu bhava, you know. If you're preaching in a foreign country, you may dress with luxurious silks and to, you know, to look good for the public cameras, like that. In private, you may wear cotton, like that. But don't do things pretentiously. First dress, then address. That's dressing nicely for preaching, public preaching. But when you're in the dham, if your dhoti's got a hole in it, big deal. Who cares? While you're doing Govardhan Parikrama, if you haven't shaved in a week, big deal. You know? What you do in the West when you preach is one thing, and what you'll do in Vrindavan is another thing. You will adopt additional devotional austerities to please Krishna for the purification of the heart in Vrindavan. So that's an example. Accepting too much fancy things you don't need, collecting too many things. If you don't need it, give it to somebody else, another devotee. Don't accept things too much. B, serving wealthy and influential materialists instead of unpretentious devotees. I gave an example of that. We told the story last Friday. We told the story about the sannyasi who tried to give the mango to the queen of Aul. And Bhaktisiddhanta Kaul said, are you the sannyasi of Aul? Auli Rani sannyasi? Are you the sannyasi of the queen of Auli? Or are you the sannyasi of the Gaudiya Mutt? Bhaktisiddhanta asked him, which sannyasi are you? It's interesting. The story is interesting. So don't try to serve wealthy and influential materialists instead of the unpretentious devotees. Why you should serve them specially? Everybody should get equal prasadam. You may offer them respect. You may invite them and escort them around, you know. But you don't need to give them so much exclusive respect. B was serving wealthy and influential materialists. See, these are all on page number 26. Instead of serving pure-hearted devotees of the Lord, he serves rich and influential materialists, busying himself in accumulating wealth beyond his needs. Accumulating wealth beyond one's needs is C. Serving wealthy and influential materialists instead of unpretentious devotees. Flattering wealthy people. Take notes, Baba. Falling asleep. So write it down. That'll keep you awake. So, C. Accumulating wealth beyond one's needs. Of course, naturally for any preaching institution, one requires a lot of capital. But one must not misuse it. Not a farthing should be spent for sense gratification, but you may spend any amount of money for the preaching, the service of the spiritual master. Sometimes when Gaur Kishore Das Babaji or Bhangsi Das Babaji Maharaj would get donations, his servants would ask, what are you going to do with these donations, Babaji Maharaj? Gaur Purnima, you know, some devotees give donations. Well, we'll make a feast for the Vaishnavas. He would sometimes buy rasgullas, you know, 200 rupees worth of rasgullas or something, and feed it to the cows. You know, feed it to the cows of Navadvip. It's interesting stories. Sometimes devotees would go to the Swami Narayan temple just to see their architecture or their mood. Anybody who goes to that temple, they'll get an escort. Somebody will greet them at the door. They will escort them, take them around, talk sweetly with them, you know, and give them some mahaprasadam in the end. Everybody gets the same treatment, whether you're Birla or whether you're a normal guy. They get that same treatment. As a result, many people are just so happy by the reception. Never mind that their philosophy is bogus. Never mind that, you know, that they don't have really much philosophy, really. But just the way they treat the guest is so nice that the guests automatically feel like becoming involved, becoming engaged, doing some service, contributing. You know, whether you're contributing $1 or you contribute $5,000. The point is that everybody feels good. So that's, when we saw that, that's actually such a very good example in that regard. But so if you become an authority, then you apply it. Okay? That's the bottom line. You try, wherever you have influence, you try to encourage the devotees. Ultimately, the Seva Bhava, if you go to in Bombay to Chaupadik Temple, Radha Gopinath Temple, they'll treat you very nice. Now, if some one of the rich congregational members comes, who is actually bankrolling the whole place, he does not get any preference. He considers himself to be a Savite in the temple. Everybody will give him the same sweet words as they give to everybody else. Of course, that's a lot. In Bombay Chaupati, they give a lot of sweet words and a lot of sweet attitude. The whole attitude toward the whole congregation is sweet. That's the bottom line. Not that just because you're a Kharpati and you walk in the temple and you're paying half of the bills, that you're going to be treated like the king of the place. But that's not happening, and at least I haven't seen that with my own eyes in Chaupati. The point is that the Vaishnavas should treat all the Vaishnavas very good. If a special guest come, then everybody may give him a little special welcome, and you know, he may give a little talk. You know what I mean? You follow me? They may address the devotees. They may, you know. Pretentious devotees. Unpretentious devotees refers to as devotees that are following strictly. They could be senior men or very sincere devotees that are very strict. Good devotees. Good devotees should be served. And the wealthy and influential materialists, if they have no devotion for Krishna, they may be encouraged. You may encourage them. Don't flatter them too much, but in order to encourage them, you may give. One should not flatter too much. If you do, then they can, but many of them are not stupid. See, they don't mind getting some sweet words and some sweet treatment, but they also know rich people are very suspicious that somebody is after my money, right? So if somebody gives them Ati Bhakti Chordir Lakshana in Bengali, they say too much devotion connotates a thief. So if somebody is giving too much flattery, then naturally a rich person becomes suspect. That's another thing. They want to be treated nicely, but not too extravagantly, because if they can see that the person's, the temple president authority is falling all over them, they can read through the between the lines. Therefore, you've got to strike a balance. My point is that a balance has to be struck. You have to be kind and cordial, but that rich person, if he sends his worker later on, you know, his office bearer, to see how he got treated, you know, then he can see for himself that, you know, if it was being pretentious or not. That's my point. Good. He's a big industrious, but if he sends his worker that goes there, you know, just to check things out, you know what I mean? Don't make a big splash. Just go there and see what goes on. How do they treat you? You know? Then they can get the true picture. The point is that an intelligent rich man can send his man and find out whether they were just trying to flatter me or whether that's the way they treat everybody. If that's the way they treat everybody, then it's a worthwhile institution. And if they just did it to flatter me, then, you know, that's exactly what they're doing. You follow me? I've seen people do that. So, it's a point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making the point. Don't flatter with any motivation. Give them respect. Some rich people, they want a certain amount of respect. Prabhupada mentioned it on the tape. Businessmen or traders are called, landowners are called Setji. And influential Vaishyas that are good traders, they're called Chaudhariji, you know. So to address them, Aye Setji, you know, so-and-so Setji, you know, and then give them around, give them some nice prasadam and give them some sweet words. You don't flatter them too much, but you have to show them some, according to their position, you should give respect. It's natural. And Vaishnava understanding, even the ant gets respect according to their station. So, okay, that's our point. All right? We have to, irregardless of what some pretentious person may do, we're after what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Right? Okay? That's my point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, these are all warnings to us how to behave and not to behave. These are survival. This is a kit for survival. If you want to survive at being a devotee, this is what you should adopt. If some people may be adopting it, some people not be. That's not our outlook. Our outlook is what are we going to adopt personally in our life, right? We should set a good example. Prabhupada didn't like that about criticism. Sometimes people were criticized. Even if it was true, Prabhupada said, so, even if it is true, you should set an example. If he's not doing it good, explain to him sweetly how he should do it, or you do it better. You know, like that. We have to look upon what is our ability. You know, you can only go so far. Follow? If they don't hear you, then let them rot, right? If they hear you, then make it a suggestion. Or drop it anonymously in a suggestion box, you know, written on a piece of paper. If you accumulate more money than you require and you're not using it for preaching, Prabhupada said money should not be put in the... stay in the bank. Spend it for preaching. Right? Fixed deposits for deity worship, Prabhupada established some also. Like in case this temple had a problem, there's a fixed deposit to maintain the deities here that Prabhupada started. So, fixed deposits sometimes for different projects, this can be done. Prabhupada started a fixed deposit for Bhaktivedanta Swami Charity Trust. So there's different ways of utilizing extra capital. But if you don't use it, if you just keep it in the bank and you're not going to use it, eventually somebody's going to steal it. Here in Vrindavan especially, if you live outside, sometimes the gundas, they find out through their contacts in the banks who's got what money. And on the parikrama marg, they went up to some sadhu who had an ashram and told him, you give us 25,000 rupees. You know, for some reason. He refused to give him. He had 3 lakhs in the bank. And they killed him. That's all. They killed him. For over 25,000 rupees. I don't know what their thing was. But they found out that he had the money in the bank. 3 lakhs of rupees in the bank. So they said, you have a lot of money. Give us this much. You know, they all extort. If you have no security, the gundas will come. You see? So don't keep money. Or the government will take it under some pretext. So, better to use it for preaching. Use it for writing, use it for printing books. Don't keep extra funds beyond your needs, even as a householder. Prabhupada mentioned to Vamandev and other people that if you're a householder, you need to keep. In 1972, he told him, keep $5,000 for emergencies. In case your child or wife is sick and they got to go to the hospital, this, that, emergencies. Now, if you add the cost of living now, you know, that's probably $15,000 to $20,000 extra for emergencies. In case your wife gets, you know, cancer or something like that, you know. For a householder, that's not a bad idea. Otherwise, one should live simply. So that's C, accumulating wealth beyond one's needs. Because Svanistha Sadhakas, mind you, are mostly grahasthas. D, having great enthusiasm for futile temporary enterprises. This is also referred to in Upadeshamrita as prayas, over-endeavoring. D is, well, this is from another book, this list here, but it's quite good because I see this list. Also, it mentioned this is this here. This is another one. Accumulating wealth beyond one's need also extends to D. It's the same thing. Having great enthusiasm for futile temporary enterprises. Enterprises means either endeavors, business enterprises or something. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur lists that in the commentary on Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila, chapter 12, verse 135. In Prabhupada's commentary there, he mentions about that. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur mentioning, sometimes one thinks about improving devotional life by business endeavors. That you'll grahasthas can get together and do a business and give the profits to the temple, right? But if you become too overly absorbed in that, then that takes away from your bhajan, your worship of Krishna. So don't get too deeply involved. That's the point. The bottom line is your spiritual balance of your daily sadhana should not go to hell. That's the point. Great enthusiasm for futile temporary enterprises. Futile means it's not going to, it won't happen. I've seen that to my God, but sometimes different devotees would ask them, what do you think about if we do this or do that? I remember even in Russia or Ukraine like that, some devotees were going to enter into a business partnership with a devotee, a businessman outside, and lend some of the brahmacharis to help him out with some prasad distribution business, have a hand in it. And my friend, the GBCs, told the devotees, don't do that. Your business is book distribution, Harinam, preaching, straight preaching like that. Householders may assist in that business, prasad distribution business, you know, like that. They may do that, and they may donate to the temple. But the temple brahmachari should not be put into such an endeavor. A partnership between the temple president and the prasadam distribution factory or whatever it is like that, and put the brahmacharis in that factory, you know, with a view of getting some money for the temple. No. That's an example. It's an example when it's not proper. For householders, it's all right. But not for temple renunciates or for temples to do it. Indulging in illogical arguments on the pretext of cultivating knowledge. It's right here on the page 26. It says here, with the excuse of educating himself, he develops attachment to speculation and logic. Back to home, back to college. It can be dangerous. And to tell you frankly, the trend, many of my godbrothers that tried to do that in the last few years, many of them are getting out of it, incidentally. They're finding that they didn't get any happiness. They didn't get any better facility to preach. It was an attempt. They tried it out. They thought maybe we can expand the borders of Krishna conscious preaching by becoming professors in colleges and stuff. But that does not increase the shraddha. There's no shraddha in these educational institutions. And basically, their logic and speculation, they often find fault with the literatures Vyasadeva and others have written. You know, the process, empirical process in the colleges and universities systematically find fault, you know, with transcendental literatures. So as a result, the principle of having shraddha in the teacher is not so much there in universities and other things. So as a result, as many people get fried. Many devotees that are scholarly devotees that try to do that. After a short span of trying to teach, they see that it's not going to work. So they're basically giving it up. The vast trend of such devotees are basically giving up on the idea. Even in early days, one godbrother, Prabhupada, who ran an institution right across the street, he also tried to do the same thing. And everybody was joking about him. Many of the Gaudiya devotees were always joking about him. They're attached to PhD degrees and this and that, the other thing, but ultimately, the person doesn't have any devotion, real. They're attached to the external label of a PhD, master's degree. But that particular devotee did not, judging by my Guru Maharaj's comments, did not possess much devotion. So, that has to be seen. One should not do it pretentiously. So, it's an example. You know, getting a university degree and propagating oneself in a college just for one's prestige. But actually, one does not have any spiritual realization much. So this is an example. Indulging in illogical arguments on the pretext of cultivating knowledge. And F, adopting the dress of a renunciate to get material prestige. In India, there was a famous person who became the chief minister of Andhra Pradesh for a while. And he was a film personality. He was a householder. But he was always walking around in the robes of a saffron robes. Later on, he got married at the age of 70, just before he died. I mean, they wore the robes of a renunciate just for show bottle. You know, he was imitating as if I'm renounced now. I gave up my first wife and family and I've become a vanaprastha or something. I'm a renunciate. And let the public see. And he claimed that I'm not taking a salary. He was the chief minister. I'm not taking a salary. He was saying like that. Later on, he married one of his fanatical supporters. Just before he died. It's an example. Adopting the dress of a renunciate to get material prestige. These are, Kasvanas, the sadhakas are basically householders. Two. Now, second category. All right? These were six categories of cheating in those who are eager for their own self-realization. Okay? Now, the next one, deceit of the parinishtha sadhakas. He becomes deceitful, A, when he makes an external show of strict adherence to rules and regulations, but inwardly remaining attached to material subjects. This is like Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3, verse 6. Karmendriyani samyamya yaaste manasasmaran indri arte vimudatma mityacharya sa uchate. One who restrains the senses and organs of knowledge requiring the senses, but who inwardly tries to enjoy the sense objects, certainly deludes himself and is called a pretender, mityachari, Krishna says. But in verse 7, Krishna says that, yes, tvindriyani manasa, one who restrains the senses by the mind, niyam yara prati arjuna, and engages his senses in regulated work without attachment to the results, is far superior. Ashakta savishishate, he's called ashakta, detached person. Prabhupada mentions rather to be a sincere sweeper in the street that gives little donations to the mutt. As a householder, right? Honest householder, has a simple job, attends the programs with the devotee, and gives donations according to their capacity. That's taken by Krishna to be better than a bogus renunciate that inwardly, you know, thinking of women and like that, just to make donations because he's a so-called renunciate. Krishna likes a sincere householder better than a bogus brahmachari or a bogus sannyasi who is not actually following. See? The sincere householder is more dear to Krishna then. One has, the bottom line is honesty. Here, in this state, dishonest behavior is, but not owning up to it, is bathing yourself in the urine of a donkey. All these different categories, what we're talking about is that. Bathing yourself in the donkey urine of pretentious behavior. It means you're joking, cheating. You're not being realistic. You're not being honest with yourself. Okay? Externally, the people would say that. Don't do as I do. Do as I say. You know? They'll tell you what should be done, but they're not doing it themselves. Right? Like the famous story is when some person's child was attached to eating sweets. They went to Mahatma Gandhi and said, tell my son, don't eat sweets. Come back next week. Why? All right, they came back next week. So I'm here. Come back next week. Why? They came back the next week, and then when they came back, don't eat sweets. Well, that was so easy. Why didn't you tell them the first time? Because I was eating sweets. I had to give up eating sweets myself. Otherwise, you know, how can I tell a boy not to eat sweets? So you have to be able to practice what you're preaching. It's a point. Not that we say something, but we do another. Okay, next. That's a deceit. Parinishtha sadhakas are claiming to support rules and regulations for the benefit of the public. That's what a parinishtha sadhaka is. All right? We will support varnashram dharma, following rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti, vaidhi bhakti, and we'll show myself externally as a very good follower of rules and regulations. It's described like drinking water. This is described as drinking water under the river in a fast day. You're proclaiming that you're doing nirjal vrata, but then you jump in the Ganges and without anybody seeing you, you drink water underneath. You know? Drinking water in the river, under the water in the river on a fast day. This is an example of this. A candid example of it. B, the second way of the deceit of the parinistha sadhakas is preferring the association of philanthropists, gyanis, yogis, materialistic people to that of resolute loving devotees. You're attached to associating with asat. You may say, well, I'm trying to cultivate them. Who's cultivating who? Who's preaching to who? That people can see very quickly that this person is not really becoming a devotee. He's materialistic. He's coming around, you're flattering him, this, that, the other thing, but he's not really becoming attached to Krishna. Whereas, the problem is this so-called leader, or whatever it is becoming too attached to this person. Then you start to wonder, is he playing with his daughter or something like that? What's he doing? Why is he so attached to these people? You know? He's always over there at their house. Is he watching their TV or something like that? What's going on? People will naturally start to talk. Naturally, they'll start to talk. These philanthropists, this gyani, yogi, materialistic person, I'm preaching him, I'm making him a life member or something like that, they may say. But he's not becoming a bettered person by associating with you. Whereas the devotees can see that by his association and attachment to always being by this materialistic man all the time, so-and-so authority is going downhill. You have to see that. And if you see that and you can't do nothing about it, you have to go to his superiors or his friends and say, hey, look, hey, so-and-so is actually going downhill. You better tell him to not associate it with so-and-so. Follow? These are all mentioned also in Madhuri Kadambini. It's called Taranga Rangini. These are the faults of Taranga Rangini. Profit, adoration, and distinction. These are different faults that occur. They're just being paraphrased in another way. Sit upright. These are being paraphrased in another way. So, these are two kinds of deceit of the Paranistasadikas. Now, there's about... Here, we'll give about 7 varieties of cheating in the Nirapeksha Sadaka, the renunciates. Okay? 7 kinds of cheating. First cheating, A, is here. This is interesting. He considers himself to be a very elevated devotee. Renunciates should be more and more humble, considering themselves to be a servant of the mass of devotees by setting a good example and preaching the absolute truth uncompromisingly. Right? That they're simply servants. The sannyasis and renunciates are simply servants of the other classes of devotees by setting a good example and teaching from a platform of humility. That's actually the platform of real renunciation that is sustainable. All right? Now, if you think that you're an elevated Vaishnava, it's mentioned also in a bhajan. Kripa Koro Vaishnava Thakura. Amitha Vaishnava e buddhi ohile. Tava abhimano bhar. Pratishtha sayasi hridaye doshibe hoibe niraya gami. He says there. In this bhajan, it mentions there. If I think I'm a Vaishnava, then I shall look forward to receiving respect from others. And if the desire for fame and reputation pollute my heart, then certainly I shall descend toward life and hell. You see? So if you think you're advanced, that's the problem. This is from a bhajan from Kalyan Kalpataru, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Kripa Koro Vaishnava Thakur. It's a very powerful bhajan. I just quoted a line from it. Same thing. You can get all this philosophy available in song, if you want. So a Vaishnava should always think, the Paramahansa Vaishnavas are actually convinced that they're the lowest of the low. When they say that, Krishnadas Kaviraj says, I am lower than the worm in the stool, and I am more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. They believe it. They're actually believing it. They're not just saying it to try to show artificial humility, to try to, you know, to attract the public by showing artificial humility. But they actually believe it. That's their bhajan. They actually believe it. So if you think yourself an elevated Vaishnava and you're proud, that means you're really a Kanishtha Adhikari. That shows you're not a Madhyamika Adhikari. Madhyamika Adhikaris are generally, they're very humble, but they're very bold with preaching. But yet they're very humble and they're not trying to attract people to them. Externally, it's dangerous. B, to adopt the dress of a renunciate and regard other sadhakas as inferior due to false ego. Because you're a sannyasi, because you're a senior person, everybody else is a small timer. This is exploiting this renunciate's dress and status. You should not demand service from people without giving them Krishna. Don't think that because you are a renunciate, somebody should come, help me out, serve me. They may if they volunteer, if they want to do so. And if they do some service, you must give them Krishna in exchange. The person who does some service to the senior men should not go empty-handed. That's the point. You want you to think it's their duty to serve me because I'm senior. No, that's not the mentality. All right? Is that clear? Should be clear. C. To accumulate wealth and materials beyond the basic necessities of life. Okay? D. To associate with women on the pretext of sadhana. Preaching is the excuse. Early in England, they used to do it. Some of our senior devotees, in fact. Sometimes they used to preach at night with wealthy ladies, you know, in England. That's how some of them gave up their sannyas vritta very quickly. Thinking, well, we should try to attract the influential class, so we'll preach to fancy, you know, rich ladies, you know, cultivate them at 10 o'clock at night, you know, with nobody looking, you know, in our room, you know. Then that's how they gave up their vritta. That was the past. That was 1982, 83. Definitely it's not going on now. That's for sure. We've had enough fall downs in our movement, so nowadays we have better monitoring and watchdog things, you know, systems now. But it's a little, I wish it was there earlier, you know, a little too late in some aspects. Associating with women on the pretext of sadhana, the Upper Sampradaya people love to do this. The Saki Bekis and all these people, Chudadaris, they do this type of thing in Bengal. Huh? Bangladesh, to some extent, the Upper Sampradayas are still going on, but to what extent? They're still there, I can't say. So, next, associating with women on the pretext of sadhana. One has to worry about associating with women. Bhaktisiddhanta was very, very strict. Everything had to be done in public. No women can talk with sannyasis in private. They must have other brahmacharis or other somebody with them. And it cannot be done at weird times of the day, at night, you know, before one takes rest, you know, when one should be spiritualizing one's mind and conscience before sleeping. No talking with women in evening hours. These are some aspects for protection. Not without a witness, for sure. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was very strict. Next, to keep close contact with materialistic people with the intention of collecting funds and donations instead of going to the temple. Says here, he leaves the shelter of a temple to collect funds and donations only to remain in contact with materialists. I mean, from when I used to stay in Bombay, our life members, those devotees that were making life memberships in Bombay, I remember that sometimes they got very attached to going to so-and-so's house and watching TV. And, you know, they fall into it, you know. They have a nice house, nice car, nice, you know, nice TV, nice scene. I'll go on Sundays, I'll just go and I'll be with him, you know. They don't say anything, but they're doing it. It happens sometimes. Loose. I've seen it, I heard it. I warned people about it. See, it means instead of using your spare time for bhajan, you would rather associate with materialists. This is one of the things it mentions. Sangha tyagat, giving up bad association is good for bhakti. And jana sanghas. Keeping jana sanghas, materialistic association, is bad for bhakti. Right? This is from Upadeshamrita. Okay? So is that clear? Now, I already mentioned it in my last lecture on Friday. For those of you who are here, you might have heard it. The example how, from the reminiscences of Jyoti Shekhar and from that upcoming book, one sannyasi in the Gaudiya Mutt wanted to borrow the collector's car with the intention of going through the bazaar and intimidating all the traders. Associate with them so much with the intention of collecting so much funds. You can collect, but it has to be straightforward. You may go and present them, like, we're building such and such temple and this and that. But things should be straightforward. And you may be friends with them at first, you know, and like that. Idea that all these things, that life just should not end after they give their donation. Prabhupada wanted them to become devotees. It's like that. You should cultivate them, continually cultivate them. Not that, you know, take their check and run away. Okay, next. F is to worry about collecting funds on the pretext of performing bhajan. You're chanting your japa, but you're worried about that you've got to do this. You know, you're not able to concentrate on your devotion. Right? It means that if you're going to do some madhukari, fundraising, at time of fundraising, you should meditate on that very good, you know. Don't let that disturb your chanting in the morning or your Bhagavatam class or something. There's time for everything. That's the point. If you're worried about collecting funds, then you can't do bhajan. It's difficult. Now, six, the last one is really good. He's overly attached to the dress, position, and rules and regulations of the renounced order, neglects the main purpose of spiritual life, which is to develop attachment for Krishna. They're attached to the artificial respect of the external address and symbols of renounced order, or even the fact that I'm a devotee. Even if you're a householder devotee in the movement, you've been for many, many long years, you're attached. You're attached to your position as a temple president or some manager, more to the respect that the devotees will give you. You're attached to that and maintaining that prestige. But you're more attached to maintaining that prestige instead of developing the respect which accrues to one of becoming a very good devotee. A devotee does not want respect anyway. The point is that if you become a very, very good devotee, respect will automatically come. That's called commanding respect. Demanding respect because you're an authority, temple president, regional secretary, GBC, whatever it is, sannyasi. The post should not be a prop, a crutch that you're leaning on. That's our point. A devotee naturally becomes respected by other devotees when they actually show attachment for Krishna, genuine attachment for Krishna, which comes about through your sincere devotional service life. So don't become attached to walking the walk and talking the talk. Doing a drama. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was mentioning. Okay? This is a good list. So we've mentioned seven of that. Okay, there's seven of those points. Seven of those, deceit of the Nirapeksha Sadhaka. Okay? Two of deceit of the Parinasta Sadhaka. So that's nine of them. And we mentioned six of deceit of the Svanasta Sadhakas. So that's 15 total. Okay? We mentioned 15 of them totally. Quite interesting. Now, how do you get away from all that? Naturally, another thing is fault-finding mentality. Another aspect of this, of the bathing oneself in the urine of the donkey, is that you would rather talk about rumor-mongering. So-and-so did this. Did you hear about that? Instead of hearing about the latest shloka, the latest nectar, oh Prabhu, you've been studying this, tell me about that. Instead of that, you're eager to talk about rumors. For this purpose, to keep rumors down, I mentioned it before, one should glorify the devotee's service in public. And if there's fine-tuning, it should be done behind closed doors with the persons concerned, the person who has the problem, and with the associates of those that they trust, authorities that they trust, who is in a position to advise them properly and encourage them. See? Fine-tune behind closed doors. Not to denigrate the reputation of a Vaishnava or Vaishnavi in public. As we mentioned it in Chaitanya Bhagavad, if you go between Vaishnavas, then you become fallen yourself. Of course, if you're in a position of authority and somebody's fall down or somebody's bad behavior can hurt the congregation. You may, out of great regret, you may warn them. Well, out of great regret, we have to publicly warn you that beware of so-and-so. Unfortunately, he's having this and this difficulty, and he has this type of habit, and he's known to cheat this, that, the other thing. And we hope that Krishna will bless him, and he'll get away from this thing. But in the meantime, we'll avoid him. You know, you may have to begrudgingly warn the congregation of Vaishnavas sometimes, in extreme cases. This is after exhausting all attempts to try to reform and rectify a devotee. If they're belligerent, they're not going to be reformed, and they're in the dress of a devotee, you know, like that, to cheat the public. Recently, some devotees were doing that here in Vrindavan. Investment schemes or some business schemes, but their whole idea is that because I'm a devotee and you're a devotee, therefore you're gullible and I'll cheat you. I'll rip you off. You know what I mean? One should be careful. So, one should be careful not to say think bad about devotees, but if something is true, it's not bad to warn devotees. But one should see whether there's actually any benefit of saying it publicly or not. That's the point. One has to be very careful. Authority, either you go to their friends and try to work on it that way, right? These qualities. Positively try to work on these defects from a point of compassion. That's one way, all right? Second way, aside from your own example, is complain. Complain to, because somebody does these things, Tarangarangani, it mentions usually a person thinks that it's okay. If it's all right, then the disease goes on, the disease mentality goes on, and you start to stack up more evidences of the offense. If they think it's all right, then more evidences of the same defect crop up. When it becomes so much, then it's hard to, you know, it's hard to hide it. You follow? Huh? Krishna will have to deal with it, or ultimately, if it's serious enough, then some watchdog body should deal with it. That's what we've got, GBC deputies. That's what we got, you know, councils. If temple presidents abuse their position, then they may get a vote of no confidence later on. You should not create politics, but corruption should not be tolerated. That's the point. You should bring it up to the notice of GBCs and devotees if they're genuine. Now, you may say so humanly, these are our evidences, now you please investigate it and do the needful. You may not spread the prajalpa to the new bhaktas or new bhaktins in the temple that don't deserve to hear it. You follow me? But that's destroying their faith in the authorities. But behind the scenes, you may work in appropriate forums. Because the idea of it is that temple presidents, authorities, you don't want to lose them. If they've been in the seat for a long time, you want to reform them rather than lose them. Because if you change the authority so much, the congregation is going to get fried with that also. Better to work behind the scene instead of blasting the person publicly. Work behind the scene to try to reform the person. If it's not going to be reformed, then distance yourself. And set a good example yourself. These are all mentioned with regards to Tarangarangani and etc. in Madhurika Dambani. Now, positive. On the positive platform now, you should, instead of rumor mongering, talking, so-and-so did this, did you hear that? These are like the topics of crows. Crows picking through the garbage, rubbish. Instead of that, our business is to talk nectar. You may have specific nectar that you're... Now, Rupa Goswami is attached to Radha Krishna, as Raghunath Das Goswami says, Gandharva Giridhari. So, the few prayers there of exemplary humility where Rupa Goswami is praying to, Ro Radharani, please be merciful to me, although I'm not very unqualified, please be kind to me, etc. Such nice prayers are very good. It says here, I'm rolling on the bank of the Jamuna, my poor heart filled with anticipation, praying to you with all humility, it says here. I'm guilty of being an offender, a rascal, a useless wretch, yet I begged you to kindly engage me even the smallest service to your lotus feet. O most merciful lady, it will not become you to ignore this most distressed soul, for your heart is always overflowing with compassion and love. Such prayers like that to Krishna and his associates are very good. They purify the heart and attract the attention of the eternal associates of Krishna.
to give us mercy. So we should rather talk about garbage. We should talk Krishna Katha of something that is specifically relevant to your budget. Or like we said, in terms of anartha nivritti, discuss which is pertinent to your own anartha nivritti with other devotees. Okay? Focus on the positive, not on the negative. This is Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's program. Even if somebody had genuine faults, if they had enough good qualities, right? Rather than try to tear down an authority, one should try to preach and encourage the good qualities that that authority has in the temple, right? Or preach and set a good example and try to preach that. If somebody has good quality and they have a few bad qualities, try to stress the good qualities and at the same time, behind closed doors, try to work on the bad qualities. It may be more fruitful to stress the good qualities one has and becomes friends with an authority on the basis of their good qualities. Then after you they've genuinely attained their friendship, then behind the scenes you may constructively criticize with an idea of improving that authority. That's the point. You'll get a lot more. You get a lot more with an extended hand than with a clenched fist. Okay? Be positive. Raghunath Bhatta Goswami's program is this. Even if somebody genuinely had faults, you would not say it so much because Krishna's in charge. Krishna will purify. Krishna's the judge. And it's more important to focus on the Krishna conscious, katha. So, one should drink the nectar that's applicable for oneself. That's the bottom line here, that's here. Right? Because ultimately speaking, we're all going to get kicked out. So what is the use of talking prajalpa or backbiting? Huh? And especially if you can't do anything about it. If the guy's too far gone, then you may think, well, all right. One way of looking at it is this. Not a blade of grass moves without Krishna. Some people may be very good managers, but they're lousy devotees. Right? So, all right, Krishna is temporarily taking advantage of their managerial qualities to engage them. Right? So, after some time, if they don't improve themselves devotionally, then they will fall down. Somebody else will be able to manage. Right? At least they got the benefit of doing that devotional service, that managing devotional service. It means Krishna is utilizing their services for now, but ultimately, if that person does not become spiritual, he's going to fall down. It's not pleasing to see that, well, so-and-so is so stubborn, he refuses to see his fault and refuses to make rectification. Well, probably eventually he's going to fall down. But he's not listening to me and he's not listening to anybody else with what to do. You know what I mean? In the meantime, why should we yank him down? Because obviously Krishna is liking some aspects of his service. Otherwise Krishna wouldn't allow him to retain the seat. So, by saying all these things, they're showing that devotees should not be attached to gambling for short-term benefits of money or prestige or buildings or assets or anything. It should not. Don't do anything at the expense of your bhajan, of your devotional purity. Purity is the force. Otherwise, it can become books of the basis. Purity is the force. Preaching is the utility is the principle. And how's it go? Preaching is the essence. Okay. One god brother was joking about the 1980s. He said, "Bucks are the basis. Just bring in money. Bucks are the basis, huh? Preaching is the excuse. Futility is the principle, and purity is a farce." It was a small degree. I think it's less. To tell you frankly, as a survivor, I'm actually positive. Right, you have a right to be skeptical. Okay, I would rather be optimistic. Am I optimistic? I'm not going to put my head in the sand like an ostrich. Okay, my point is I would rather associate with the devotees that are behaving properly. I will associate with the sannyasis and the devotees that are behaving properly, right? And those that are not behaving properly, Krishna will slap them or let them take their reaction. See, because we may be concerned with the whole society of ISKCON, but what can you do about it? If you can't, then better just to focus on what you can do. That's the point.
No,